I want to take a minute to tell you about a really fun Parcast original called Mythical Monsters. It tells the stories of dragons, sea serpents, giants, demons, and other terrifying creatures, and asks what they represent to mankind. And right now, I'm going to play an exclusive clip from our episode on the legend of the Gargouille, a French dragon that terrorized the people of a small village on the Seine River. If you want to hear the full first episode, follow Mythical Monsters and listen free on Spotify or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. I hope you enjoy the clip.
Please note, all myths and legends have variations, and the story you're about to hear is not intended to be read as a definitive interpretation. We've combined several accounts of the gargoyle to bring it to the center of this dramatic retelling and to truly emphasize the character and ferocity of the monster. The morning sun signaled the end for those that were condemned. The jailer lined up the prisoners, checking that their chains were secure before the bishop arrived. It had rained the night before. The stone gargoyle protruding from the nearby church dripped black water from its gaping mouth, a grotesque sight. But for these prisoners, it was also a symbol of hope, of potential salvation. The bishop arrived and went inside the church to pray while the executioner ensured that the chopping block was secure. The prisoners eyed the dark bloodstains left by the countless men who had lost their heads over that wooden stump. The bishop emerged from the church. Bible in hand, he moved along the men. He offered each of them their last rites and the chance to confess their sins before their time on this earth had ended. The bishop stopped at the last prisoner. He stood taller than the others, and his eyes sparkled with a strange fire. He had not yet been broken by the stagnant purgatory of imprisonment. "That one," the bishop said, drawing a finger over the man's forehead. Without a word, the guards moved and released the man. They gave him fresh clothes, sturdy boots, a bag of supplies and coin, and sent him on his way. The released prisoner thanked the bishop for his kindness and swore that he would earn his salvation. As the exoneree made his way out of the village, he stopped once more to consider the gargoyle mounted over the church. It was because of that gargoyle and its kind that he had been offered his freedom. He would never forget it. Welcome to Mythical Monsters, a Parcast original. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Every week, we dive into history's most legendary monsters. In telling their stories, we hope to shed light on some truths hidden behind the creation of these beasts, where they come from, what they symbolize, and how they expose humanity's greatest fears. You can find episodes of Mythical Monsters and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Mythical Monsters for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Mythical Monsters in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoy today's episode, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help us. This episode is about the gargoyle. Today, most know gargoyles as the stone-sculpted spouts that adorn cathedrals and churches. Largely associated with Gothic architecture, gargoyles divert rainwater away from the roof of a building in order to prevent water damage. While these creatures can be found in Catholic imagery and tableaus from the early Middle Ages, Research shows that there is really one key definitive origin of the monster's legend, the story of Saint Romanus. They stand above, perched on their stone precipices, always watching, never blinking, wings stretched, jaws gaping, hideous and beautiful and eternal. They are the gargoyles. A perfect combination of form and function, the gargoyle is more than art. Their gaping mouths are used to divert water away from the building's roof in order to prevent damage to the structure. A statue that does not serve this purpose is technically called a grotesque, meaning that the bat-winged statues shown coming to life in animated films and TV shows are not truly gargoyles at all. The practice of adorning the spouts of buildings with animal likenesses dates back to ancient Egypt. But the dragon-like creatures that are commonly used as gargoyles today originated in medieval Europe, long before these mythical creatures became a fixture of Gothic architecture. They appeared in the stone tableaus of Catholic churches. Often they were depicted as Satan's demons, preying on the sinful. But somewhere along the way, they went from being symbols of evil to our ever-watchful protectors. To explore the origins of the gargoyle, we must look into the annals of a Catholic legend, one that tells of a priest who traveled to a region of northern France in order to do battle with a monstrous evil. Guillaume could already feel the sweat drenching his cotton shirt as he half-dragged the oversized bucket toward the riverbank. The town well had run dry weeks ago, and there had hardly been a drop of rain. Desperate, the citizens of Rouen had turned to boiling river water to drink. And today, it was Guillaume's turn to fetch the water. He lugged the bucket to the river's side and set about removing his boots and rolling up the legs of his pants. This was no way to live. Of that he was certain. The town was cursed, and all who lived there would surely be better off by leaving it. But the town council had voted on this exact issue many, many times, and the verdict had always been the same. They would live, or more accurately, die, with this land that they called their home. Damn! Guillaume cursed as a mosquito burrowed its way into his neck. The drought, the heat, and the flies made him almost wish for death. Surely hell couldn't be worse than Rouen. Guillaume was so caught up in his own irritation that he didn't see the movement below the surface of the water. What at first seemed like a school of shimmering fish was something more. Something bigger. The creature's snout broke the surface of the river, blowing hot breath across the shimmering water. Guillaume glimpsed it only briefly, its slender, snake-like body, leathery wings, and gray scales, before it struck. Guillaume didn't even have time to scream before the creature buried its razor-sharp fangs into his neck and dragged him below the water's surface. When his wife realized Guillaume was missing, she went to the river in search of him. All she found was blood-stained mud on the soaked riverbank. The gargouille had claimed yet another victim. For months, the region of Rouen had been victimized by this sea snake, which sprung from the river to pull hapless villagers to their deaths. The town elders had been slow in mobilizing a response to the creature, but with Guillaume's death, they found the pressure mounting. At this point in the story, the gargoyle bears characteristics more commonly associated with a better-known mythological creature, the dragon. During the Dark Ages, the common perception of a dragon wasn't the massive winged behemoth that we know today. Rather, a 7th century European dragon was more akin to a very large, four-limbed, winged snake, which developed from the Greco-Roman conception of the creature. Most dragons conformed to this standard idea, and few individual dragons were noteworthy enough to warrant their own names. But the Gargouy demanded special consideration, especially due to its relationship with water. That night, the villagers gathered before the church in the town center. Action was a necessity. These men and women would not stand idly by and wait to be picked off one by one by this scaly beast. One man barked, "No rain comes, and now we cannot draw water from the river." Another replied, "We will die of thirst." "Better to die that way than end up in the monster's belly," yelled another. "We must be calm," the local bishop cautioned, to the ire of all. But the people could not be calm. Another spoke, "Send word to Paris. Have King Clovis send men with swords and nets so they can cut the creature down." "With what money?" the bishop retorted. "Armies are not cheap. And besides, what good will armed men be against a great water serpent?" "We have to do something," someone shouted. On this, the town agreed. The villagers could not rely on anyone else coming to rescue them, so they decided that they would take the fight to the creature themselves. It was decreed that every able-bodied man would gather whatever tool or weapon he could find. At dawn, they would march to the river and kill the Gargouy. The next morning, all of the men armed themselves and ventured to the riverbank, ready to take the creature down with pitchfork and hatchets. The morning water was cool and still. The men waited for hours. Finally, one of them waded out into the river until the water was at his waist. The other men followed suit until they were all half submerged, ready to fight the creature on its own turf. The fools. As soon as the first man was pulled below the surface and devoured, the others dropped their weapons and fled. Who were they to think they could take on this creature? Farmers and merchants, all of them. No warriors. As the men fled for their lives, the Gargouy rose out from below the water's surface, opened its mighty jaws, and unleashed a torrent of blistering flames. The men fell, one by one, as each of them was burned alive. Satisfied that its enemies were slain, the Gargouy retreated back into the water. The women, children, and elders of the town rushed out toward the riverbank to where their sons, husbands, and fathers had fallen. One woman fell to her knees beside her husband's charred corpse. "Curse you, foul beast! May you be struck down by God himself, back to the pits of hell from whence you came!" As if in response to the curse, the dragon rose once more from below the surface of the river. It opened its mouth as if to blow fire on the remaining villagers. The people screamed and covered their heads, waiting for the burning embrace of death. But the dragon did not breathe fire this time. Instead, it gushed a massive stream of water from its gullet, uttering a terrible gurgling sound as it did. The creature sprayed out so much water that it flooded the riverbank, washing the mourning villagers away with their dead and covering the entire town in a violent tidal wave. When the water subsided, the creature was gone, as was the town. everything the few survivors owned, their homes, their valuables, their livestock, had been washed away in the flood. All they could do was pray.
To find out what happens next, follow Mythical Monsters and listen free on Spotify or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.